श्री राम जय राम जय जय रामोम श्री राम जय राम जय जय रामोम श्री राम जय राम जय जय रामोम श्री राम जय राम जय जय रामोम। I bow to Lord Rama in all his manifestations and in you. Today I would like to read, and later I will sing to you a song that I wrote in a Western mode for the story of Rama and Sita. This is number 94 in my book, Conversations with Yogananda. It's an interesting thing that a liberated master who doesn't need teaching, nevertheless, in this world of Maya, for example, Lahiri Mahashaya was already liberated, but that was sort of suspended as if he hadn't completely entered into that incarnation until he met Babaji in the Himalayas. Then Babaji awakened him to that memory, but even then Babaji scolded him for something. And so it was that my guru's guru, although my guru was a liberated master, nonetheless his guru gave him stern training because he knew he had to go to the West where he would have to go a lot of opposition, and just to help make him sort of steeled to it. My master Suyukteswar, he said to me, was often harsh with me, even in public. The master said, his intention was to discipline me so I'd become indifferent to public opinion. One day, before hundreds, he asked me to fetch him a glass of water. I went at once. As I returned with the glass, my foot caught on the corner of a carpet and flipped it over. Look at that clumsy oaf, scoffed my master. Everyone there laughed. I looked at them and thought, not one of you has attained what I have. But he succeeded in hardening me, so I wouldn't be affected by anybody's opinions. Indeed, and this is a parenthetical statement of mine, for one who loved people deeply as the master did, it was important that he become immune to the hurts they dealt him. Their callousness, and even their hatred. And that's the end of that parenthesis. Even with that hard training, the master loved his guru deeply. A picture of Sri Yukteswar hung in the hallway outside his apartment at Mount Washington. Whenever he passed it, he would pause a moment in silent prayer. Very few, he told me, were able to bear Sri Yukteswar's discipline. Once the others in the ashram came to me in a body and said, let us leave here, we've decided to follow you instead. You leave, I replied, I stay with my guru. Many fled. He didn't even want disciples, but just see, by converting me, he converted thousands. Sir, I once asked him, was it because he knew he wouldn't be coming back to this world that he didn't want disciples? Was it because he didn't want the responsibility for anyone else on this plane? That's right, the master replied. He had a few stragglers this time, that's all. A guru takes on responsibility for his disciples and either sees it through himself or, as my guru said to a sister disciple of mine, those who fall by the wayside, my devotees will pick them up. But my guru also said that I will come back again and again and again. Through as many lives as it takes, I will ply my boat back to these shores and across, as long as one stray brother weeps by the wayside. This kind of love is, to my mind, extraordinary, but it's wonderful to see the game, the sort of play that the masters have with their disciples and with others. We see it also in the life of Rama and Sita. It was a play, really. When you think of the experience that Rama had being banished from his kingdom and everything, that was all a play. He didn't have to do that. It was for the karma of his time. And an interesting thing, you know, I've written a song based on the story of the Ramayana. Of course, in a short song, you can't tell everything by any means. I remember reading that the first time I read that great epic, I just felt so clean inside. It's such a great story. I was comparing it once with the Tolkien trilogy, where all the bad people are the strong ones and all the weak ones are wimps. They don't seem to have any strength at all. Strength is powerful. Rama was a great power. But at the end of that story, you remember in Valmiki's Ramayana how Sita had to be sent away. And it seemed like a tragic thing. But you know, spiritually speaking, the story had to end like that. You cannot be true if you end a story saying the way they do in fairy tales, and they lived happily ever after. Nothing ever ends happily. Nothing. If it seems to end happily in this life because somebody dies soon enough, it'll happen in the next life. Life is just up and down waves. You can't change that fact. For every success, there's going to have to be a failure. For every triumph, there will be a defeat. For every joy, there will be a suffering, a sorrow. It's just the nature of this world. That story could not be true to scriptures. It could make a beautiful story, but it wouldn't be true spiritually if it had not ended in such a sour note as it did. Too bad, but you know that in eternity they loved each other's souls. And you know, a very interesting thing happened to me. I mentioned to you that I had seen, I had received a patra of a Bhrigu Sanghita. I received the first one in Barnala and then the second one in Delhi. And in Barnala, I was told that in my last life I had been a renunciate, but I had been married. And I sent my wife back, and she came and wanted to live with me after 10 years or 12 years, and I wouldn't let her. And it said in the reading itself, those people who think God is pleased with you just because you're a renunciate don't know that the Lord himself is always with his consort. You see here that story of Rama and Sita. He said, if you have a bad wife, a stupid wife, a foolish wife, a materialistic wife, okay. If you want to seek God, that's a higher dharma. But if she's a good woman and wants to seek God, then you made a mistake. And that was my mistake at that time. But it's an important lesson to state, because so many renunciates, so many swamis look down on householders as if they were beneath their high level of spirituality. Many people serve the swamis in Rishikesh and give them food and so on, and the swamis look down on them as householders. That's a contemptible attitude. These people are serving them. They should see it as their service to them also, to give them teaching, to give them blessing. Well, not all swamis are like that, but too many are. Too much ego in the field of renunciation. This is not what it's all about. That's why my param guru was a married man. He didn't need to be married. Trilanga Swami, who was an absolute renunciate, he paid notable tribute to Lahiri Maharshi in public. And they were saying, but sir, you as a renunciate should not be a Swami. You should not be giving this kind of tribute to a householder. He said, he has attained that for which I have given up even my kopin. The real renunciation, and this is what Lahiri Maharshi's life was all about, is of the heart. I have met many householders in India who have said to me that, well, when I retire, then I'll go to the Himalayas. Well, you know, by then, the trouble is that your habits will already be formed. You can't just suddenly, at the age of 70 or something, decide, now I'm going to be spiritual. You've got to begin at an early age. Yes, there can be, and I gave you an example recently of an old woman who had been an atheist all her life and then was converted and achieved freedom in that lifetime. But that's not very usual. usually people carry their habits with them. In fact, to be perfectly truthful, after the age of 40, it is not easy to change. This is what my guru said. Yes, you can change, but it's a lot easier for you've already started the process of changing before 40. If at the age of 60 you suddenly say, well, I'm no longer going to cheat everybody and become a renunciate, it won't work that way. You have to, from the beginning, put some time aside for God. Don't wait. For God's sake, don't wait. Spend a few minutes at least. You know, you spend time brushing your teeth, you spend time sleeping, you spend time dressing yourself, combing your hair if you've got any left. Then, for heaven's sake, give a little time to God also. Try to just meditate. Lahiri Maharshi taught us a wonderful technique. It's known as Kriya Yoga, which is a very simple word. There are thousands of Kriyas. But the Kriya Yoga of Lahiri Maharshi of Benares is, or of Varanasi, is the right Kriya that we teach. And it's the main technique on the path of Raja Yoga. If you have not read Autobiography of a Yogi, then please do. I tell you, it's the greatest book I've ever read. I read it when I was 22 years old. That was back in 1948. A little while ago, 56 years ago. And I was in New York. I didn't know anything about Indian philosophy. 1 week before, I'd never heard words like guru and yoga and karma and atman and all those things. I didn't know those words at all. I read that book and it so completely convinced me. I knew not only what the word guru meant, but I knew that I had met the man that I wanted to give my life to. I took the next bus 4 days and four nights across America to Los Angeles, where he was living. And I became his disciple, and thank God he accepted me. And he said Divine Mother had told him to, but he knew. The thing is that the play between the masters and the disciples is a very interesting one. You cannot say, somebody was saying to me, well, but you say your guru was a great master, but he came so humbly to his guru. Every disciple, even after he has been liberated, he will still always remember that through this channel I attained God. There will always be that sense of humility and respect. And the beautiful thing about my guru was that he was humble before everybody, because he saw in everybody the same one God incarnated, maybe asleep still, but that potential was always there. One time, because he told me to grow a beard, he had me lecturing when I was starting, when I was still 22. I'd been with him only 8 months. And I looked awfully young. And the more I stayed with him, the younger I looked. And most of the people listening to me were 40 and older. So he told me to grow a beard and to make me look a little bit more mature. He said, it gives you character. I said, sir, it makes me a character. In those days, people didn't have beards in America. And anyway, because of this beard, some people were thinking I looked like Jesus Christ, and they asked me if I would be in a pageant for a scene that they were having in a Masonic lodge, installation of officers, and I was supposed to be Jesus at Gethsemane. And all I had to do was sort of sigh every now and then and close my eyes. It was kind of silly. But the thing is that later, my guru said, well, they were saying you looked like Jesus Christ. And I took it as a big joke, and I said, yes, well, I'd rather be like him than look like him. And you know, the beautiful thing was, he said, that will come. That's how he saw everybody, not in his present deluded state. He saw everybody as a potential Christ or Krishna. Everyone is a potential God. This is the difference between a great master and the average person. I would have expected master when I said that to sort of chortle. Well, you know, I mean, that's how most people would react. I know he wouldn't speak like that. But still, I did not expect him to say, very seriously, that will come. That's how he saw everyone. When you look at yourself in the mirror, you may see lots of lines of anger, disappointment, frustration, sorrow, whatever it might be. Don't take that seriously. You are the eternal Atman. And the more you live in that consciousness, that is what Rama and Sita were incarnated to show us. A perfect love between man and wife, not carnal, not desirous, each loving God, respecting God, worshiping God in the other. In this way, human relationships can be spiritualized, and our relationship with God can be sanctified. We must see God in one another, and more especially, it's easy to see God in the stranger, you'll never see him again. More especially is it important to see God in those who are close to you, in those whom you love and who love you. This is one of the greatest things I saw in my guru. They say that no man is a great man, a hero in the eyes of his valet. My guru was a hero and a great man in the eyes of all those who knew him. Joy to you.